Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland is for informational and educational purposes only. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dave Crossland, all the way from across the pond. It is our first episode this year, Dave. How you doing, man?
I'm good, and happy new year and all that jazz.
Yes, sir. Happy new year to you, too. So just to briefly catch up, we haven't talked really since, I mean, besides messaging back and forth, we haven't really spoke since before Christmas. Did you guys have a nice holiday and everything?
Yeah, it's a quiet one, steady, which I like, to be honest. I'm not one for, I'm old, mate, you know what I mean? I sit with slippers these days and do sod all. So, just ticked over nicely. Chilled out, didn't do a great deal.
Nice.
Back to work now with a bit of a bang, which has been a bit of a shock to the system. But that's it. One minute you take time off and you always come back to a mountain of work you need to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there's nobody else with the type of work you do. There's nobody else doing it while you're away.
No, it's not like a job where you work for someone and you sort of go on holiday and someone takes over your role sort of thing and the machine just keeps moving on. If I stop, the machine stops, unfortunately.
But it's job security.
To be fair, the client base wise, most of my clients were pretty relaxed over Christmas, which made life easy. So I wasn't getting, you know, oh, can I eat an extra Brussels sprout with this meal and stuff like that. It was all quite tame and quite normal, which was nice. Been doing a load of changes around the home,
nice.
Rearranged my office, brought in and doubled it up basically. And my wife's going to start working with me.
Oh, that's cool.
So we've just got to upgrade the computer system, which I'm waiting to sort at the moment. Hey, I hate tech.
Your wife chimed in last time we posted the show. We were talking about you in a Fiat 500, and she had some comments to throw in on that one. I think she enjoyed that story.
Yeah, I still can't find the video or the picture, but I haven't seen – my trading partner has a video.
Okay. On his,
so I will endeavor when I see him tomorrow to try and remember to get it off him.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I had a bunch of people clamoring. Everybody wanted to see it.
It's amusing, to say the least.
Big man, little car.
I should be able to find some pictures of me in a Series 1 Mini as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be able to find them. So I will actually, let me make a note.
Was that back in your hairdressing days?
No, that wasn't that long ago. a friend of mine deals in cars from home, and he only has a couple, and he generally deals in high-end stuff.
Yeah.
So every now and again, if I've got a special occasion, he'll let me take something nice. But
Because that's what you said to me when I told you I drove a Mini. You asked me if I was also a hairdresser.
Yes, but that's because yours is a modern Mini. You see, this was a classic Mini, so that's cool.
They're even smaller, man. Those things are tiny. Yeah.
They are, but they've got cool. I mean, that has an Italian job car.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the remake bollocks, you know, the original. Blow the bloody doors off one.
Yeah.
But
we have turbo now, though. Turbo helps.
True.
It's nice. It's fun.
But he bought a limited edition special anniversary thing as a trade job.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I was between cars. I'd sold one, and I wasn't picking a new one up for a few days. So he said, oh, I'll take this. You can borrow this. I loved it, actually. It was a proper lowered race spec type thing, and it was fun.
Ooh, dude, that would be cool, man. Yeah, I love Minis. It's a weird car. It's a very specific thing, man. But I think the people that are into them are really into them, you know?
You find that with lots of these. There's like VW and stuff like that. You know, people that are into them are obsessive about them.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, so I'm still looking for a car. Still haven't found one. I think I've settled on what I'm getting. I've just got to find the right one now.
Okay. Right on, man.
So I actually had a phone call from one of the garages I was speaking to while I was talking to you.
Yeah.
They were ringing me back about spec on something they had in stock. So hopefully next week I'll be mobile again.
Yeah, that'd be a bonus. I couldn't imagine being just stuck, you know. And you could take the wife's car, but still, you know, it's a hassle, man. And at the end of the day, too, I'm glad you're all right. And one thing I don't think we mentioned, and of course, none of this stuff has to do with bodybuilding, but you everything did work out with the car. They did end up giving you the money for it and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They gave me what I wanted. They were really good, actually. I can't fault them. LV Insurance, just in case anyone was interested. No, I'm not on commission. But, no, they were really, really good. And I spoke to him, actually, it was Christmas Eve, and the guy just said, what are you looking for? I said, what I'm looking for. And he said, yeah, I'm happy to give it you, mate. Off you go. So that's all done and dusted. So like I say, it's just a case of buying a new one now.
Nice.
And that is pretty much it. Like I say, it's a bit stuck in limbo at the moment, waiting for things to come so we can start moving forward. We're pushing this education stuff into schools. But yeah, at the moment, it's all sort of a bit treading water and this dreaded court report that's hanging around my neck forever and a day. And that's only because I keep avoiding it. And if I didn't avoid it, I'd probably have nearly had it done by now.
Right, right. I know how that goes.
Yeah. And, you know, new year, new me and all that stuff, new year resolutions. Not that I particularly made any this year, but...
Do you ever make new year's resolutions?
I think it's natural that at this time of year, you know, well, obviously not so much now, but, you know, a week ago, so to speak, that you... You sort of look back over the year, and obviously most people aren't working in this period of time. They're off work. So they actually have the time to sit and sort of reflect.
Yeah.
And I think it's natural that you look back. And you know, last year was a busy year. There's no denying that. It was an eventful year in a lot of ways. But it was a busy, hard year. I don't know. There's a lot to show for it in certain ways, and then there isn't in other ways, if you know what I mean. I don't know if that makes sense. A lot of groundwork be done, a lot of preparation work being done last year. And then, so obviously the other thing is it's also natural to plan forward. I mean, you know, we always have good intentions at the start of a period of time, you know, be it a new week or a new month, but obviously even more so at the beginning of a new year.
Absolutely.
I mean, lots of people, there's a lot of, you know, new year, new me piss taking on social media. But you know what? If whatever the catalyst for positive change is, does it really fucking matter?
I totally agree.
You know, I see nothing wrong with New Year's resolutions. And no, some people may fall by the wayside. The vast majority may fall by the wayside. But if they're positive for a week, a month, a year, whatever, then it's more than they were going to be.
You know what? I just thought of this, Dave, because this is resolutions are something I've been thinking about a lot. I talked about them with Dr. Scott Stevenson a little bit when we did Muscle Minds, and I think I mentioned it with VJ too on Bodybuilding Nerds. And I've talked about this before. Every year I think about it because I started creating resolutions, and something I just thought about was the things that are like the biggest mistake is to not try. So if you're, like you said, if you're going to make a resolution and you're going to put it out there, then at least, you know, if you're going to put effort toward it, at least you're trying. I think that it's easier to be like, well, I'm just not going to make a resolution because they're stupid. I'm just going to do stuff. But then, you know, the key is putting it out there and trying. And sometimes I think saying it, like saying what you're going to do, saying it out loud, it helps me to continue working toward that goal. Because now I'm accountable to it. Other people know what I'm trying to do. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say that social media outburst or that public declaration of your intention. Yeah, there's no doubt that some people just do that because they're drama queens and want attention. And they'll always right. be attention-seeking whores, and that's always never going to change. But some people do it to create an element of accountability.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've said it now, so there are people now beholding me to. I've done that, and you know, I have done that when it's come to diets. I've been public about diets because it made me accountable to somebody.
Yeah.
Particularly because really the desire to get lean isn't that strong.
Mm.
So creating accountability with other people, I know it's a healthy thing to do, and I know it's a sensible thing to do, but the actual personal desire to be there isn't particularly great, to be fair. It's more of something I know I need to do rather than something I want to do.
Yeah. I think the only thing that could be a downfall is at the same time, we don't want to talk about it too much. Somebody was telling me this, and I don't know any of the facts that back it up, but from what she was saying, you can get the same satisfaction from saying, hey, Dave, I'm going to do this in my life. And then you get excited for me. and I get the reward. I haven't even done it, but you're happy for me. I get the reward. I feel good because I said I'm going to do this thing. And you could just live off of feeling good and never changing, you know?
Well, the whole phenomenon of likes, isn't it? You know, you post an image or you post a statement to create likes, to create attention, because you buzz off attention.
Yeah.
And it's just another process of that. I mean, I think, though, where a lot of people go very, very wrong with New Year's resolutions is they're not realistic.
Mm.
You know, a quite plausible New Year resolution for me would be to say, you know what, I'm going to compete in the Masters this year.
Okay.
But it's completely unrealistic because I have no desire to compete in the Masters. I have no desire to step on stage. Don't get me wrong. If you turn around to me and said, "Yeah, Dave, here's a tablet. Take this, and you'll be in contest prep within a day of taking it."
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I would.
All right. You didn't have to put any work in, right?
But when you balance the achievement against the work required to get there, it's just not something that I want enough to be able to do it.
Mm, yeah.
And something that was said to me many, many years ago by Alvin Small, the British pro bodybuilder, and I think I've mentioned this before to you as well, was that I was making excuses for not having competed. And he said, well, you just didn't want it enough. And I went to defend myself, and then I just stopped myself and went, no, you're right. I didn't want it enough.
Yeah, you did mention this story.
And I think that's very apt for a lot of people. You know, if you desire something enough and you're not being stupid like saying, you know, I'm going to learn the ability of flying. I'm going to become Superman. You know, as long as you're being realistic with what you're setting as goals, then they are all achievable if your desire is strong enough to achieve them. But for most people, what they set as goals, or not for most people, there are a lot of people that set goals that are just unrealistic in essence of what they want to achieve and do. And you'll see this in coaching. I see this in, oh, I want to be massive. Do you actually understand what being massive is?
Mm.
Do you understand what being massive requires? I mean, I've got a client at the moment. I think he weighed in this week at 135 kilos.
Okay.
He's a big boy. I mean, you know, weighed towards that 265, so just short of 300 pounds.
Yeah, it's a lot.
He's not in bad condition, and he really wants it. And as a result, he eats food continuously. He's constantly in pain from training. But he's motivated because that's what he wants to achieve, and because it's what he wants to achieve. And this is probably, he's gained 15, 18 kilos in the last 6-7 months. Mm. But it's because that's what he wants to achieve. But I know other people that if I said, oh, you know, you're 6'1", you're 220 at the moment, you want to be 300 pounds, they go, yeah. But 5 minutes of talking with what this guy goes through to achieve that, they'd be like, oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And this is sort of the point. You know, in order to achieve a resolution or in order to achieve a goal, you need to understand what it takes to achieve that goal.
Sure.
And if you don't understand that, then you're putting yourself at a bit of a disadvantage in the first place because you're not making an informed decision about whether that's ever going to be achievable.
Hmm.
You know, I would love to be able to sing, but or even play. For some reason, I've always wanted to play saxophone. I never will because I'm bloody tone deaf and absolutely useless with stuff like that. But you know, and that's the thing. When you set goals, you've got to set goals that you have some chance of accomplishment. Because if you don't, you'll internally be disappointed. You'll eternally be striving for something that just is never going to be viable for you.
Yeah.
And that can lead to this loop of disappointment, you know, this loop of, oh, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then not achieving it, and oh, well, I want it to do this. But whereas setting smaller goals, more achievable goals, create an air of positivity, and we all perform better when we're positive and we're in that positive sort of mindset and things are progressing. You do that with your training. You know, when training's going well and you're getting stronger, you continue to get stronger.
Sure.
And so, you know, part of the thing about goals and New Year's resolution is to be practical and realistic about what's achievable. And set mini goals, set mini achievement points as part of a long-term plan. I mean, I do it in business. I want to be working with on a level where we're delivering 50 presentations annually by the end of this year.
Wow, that's a lot of presentations, and that's a lot of logistics to figure out. So I can imagine in that case, you probably have to step back.
You say that, but within a 30-mile radius of where I live, there are 600 schools.
Okay, and that's what I was about to say is, you say that, but then what do you have to do? You've got to step back and say, okay, is this possible? So apparently the answer is yes. The next question is, now logistically, how do I make this happen? What's the first step I need to take, right?
And when we deliver 5 different presentations, you could really say, well, all I need is 10 schools. Or if you say, right, well, I've got 5 schooling years in each school. So 1 presentation per year, that's 5 presentations a school. So you can see how that initial number, though you thought it was quite high, actually, when you start looking at it in the situation, it's actually very low.
It's pretty realistic then.
Yeah. So, and that, you know, that's what I want to achieve by the end of this year. And I think, and you know, 200 would be brilliant.
Yeah.
1,000 would be amazing, but I will class it as a success. Don't get me wrong. I'll strive for as many as I possibly can. And I'm a great believer in really, you know, the sky's the limit, reach as far as you can. But if I achieve 50, then I'll be satisfied that the year was a success. If not, then I will definitely be sitting down and reassessing things and saying, right, is this a viable project? Is this business plan workable? Or do I need to look at it again? Or do I need to look at it in a view that it just is never going to happen because the marketplace just isn't there?
Yeah.
No one really currently doing what I do in the way I'm envisaging doing it. Is that because no one's really gone that route? Or is that because there isn't, it's not viable? So, you know, and things like that you need to look into when you set your personal goals.
Yeah.
But so many people just go, oh, I'm going to step on stage and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that without any real understanding of what's involved in doing it. And then they're disappointed and then they get fed up and then they lose faith or fall out of love with what they're doing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've fallen out of love in training points in my training life because of other factors, not the actual training. And disappointment in other areas, all because I'd set unrealistic goals and achievements to achieve. And so I was permanently disappointed in what I was doing.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can totally relate to that, too. I think I'm sure a lot of people can, but it's hard to step back and look at it the way you just did to objectively say that about yourself. You know, it's easier to say, well, I just wasn't good at this.
Well, we just come back to being honest about things, don't I? And just looking at things and breaking the, we tend to look at things in totality a lot instead of actually breaking it down to its individual elements.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we look at, argument's sake, individual weighs 240 pounds and he sets a goal to be 280 pounds in good condition by the end of the year.
Okay.
He enjoys training, not so brilliant with the diet, finds that a struggle, finds that a hardship, gets halfway through the year and he's only gained 10 pounds, frustrated, fed up, doesn't feel like he's progressing, so walks away from it all. When he enjoyed the training. So remove the pressure of achieving the weight, the size. Look at the diet from a more pragmatic point of view. Is okay, so let's not follow a pure bodybuilding diet. Let's look at a little bit of flexibility in this. But if we're going to be flexible, we need to compensate for that. You enjoy training. You enjoy being active. So fair enough, you can have a more relaxed diet on a weekend, but you're going to do more cardio.
Yeah.
And you can still enjoy the training. You still get the benefits from the training. You have a more balanced approach, a more balanced life, and get more pleasure from it. Whereas the previous scenario, he's walked away from the training, he's walked away from the diet, and now he's sedentary and miserable because he looks like shit and feels like shit, and eating a poor diet because he just gave up wholeheartedly instead of picking out of it what elements he enjoyed and continuing with them.
Yeah, I follow exactly what you're saying. Hopefully people are listening to this, because I feel like it's advice that I know I could have used, especially, you know, when I was a little bit younger, and you're still trying to figure this stuff out. So, guys, if you're in that situation, I hope you're listening to Dave. Dave, what do you say we take a quick break here and come back? We've got a bunch of questions that we could tackle.
Yeah, no problem at all.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a minute. Hey guys, I wanted to take this break to say thanks to Dave for everything he's doing here at Advices Radio, and thanks to Dave for everything he's doing for bodybuilding as a whole. You guys can check out more of his stuff. Go visit his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professions, as well as advice to individual users. You guys can also check Dave out on his YouTube page, which is in the show notes, and also go to underconstructionthefilm.com to purchase the films today. Use the code ADVICES25 for a discount. All right, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crosslin. I'm Scott McNally. We put out a question thread. We've got some questions at the message board still. And I got to tell you, we answered a couple of them for the last episode that I lost. Dave, this is it's a first in Advices Radio history. I reformatted my computer. So we've got a couple questions from the board that we are going to have to redo. But I've got a bunch of them here. That we gathered up from Facebook. One of them that you got, and this is from Darren Brennan. He's asking about Tren and digestive issues. Have you personally seen anybody or yourself deal with digestion problems specifically that you could pinpoint that was related to Tren?
The main thing I've seen, the acid reflux does seem to be a common problem with Tren, and to be honest, if you're wanting a big sciencey answer as to why it's caused, I can't give you 100% one.
Yeah. Well, there's not any studies really, right?
No, not with human consumption, no. But one thing that I have noticed, answered anecdotally with Tren, is that it does seem to raise liver values.
Okay, yeah.
When livers get stressed, they do affect the stomach, and they can affect digestion, and they can affect acid, and they can affect bloat. So I would, if you're having big issues with Tren and for some reason you feel you need to run it, then I would check your liver values and try and get them under control. If they are under control, then really your only option is not take it, I'm afraid. You can run antacids and you can run other preparations, but you will just be masking the problem.
Right.
Which, you know, for some people is fine, but it's not really the best way of coping with it. And I don't understand why people feel that Tren is necessary. It's a powerful drug by all means, but it, you know, it's not the be all and end all. It's not required.
Totally agree.
You can use it and you can get on well with it and you can be very effective, but you don't have to use it. You can still get results with other drug combinations as well. And you know, it's definitely a personal choice on that front.
Yeah. And it's a scary proposition to a guy who says, I want to do everything it takes to get in my best shape. And, you know, Tren is known to be this great compound for that. I could tell you that it was something I had to deal with because I had issues with Tren. And I decided, hey, I'm going to try getting into do a contest basically without it. And I can report to anybody who isn't sure about this, you can get into just as good a shape, get just as ripped, you know, look just as hard without Tren. It could definitely be done. I've proved it to myself.
Yeah, it can be. It's the rule of form, and it's pretty much the rule of form in life, is simple as this. The bigger the bang, the more the cost. In whatever you do. You want a big, fast car, it's going to cost you more money to run.
Yeah.
You want a big physique, it's going to cost you more food. You want rapid gains from chemicals, they're going to be more toxic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, easily breaking it down. I got a lot of digestive issues from Tren. And to take it a step further, it wasn't just the Tren. At first, what I noticed, Dave, is I started getting bad. I'd get like the Tren cough. And then after that, an hour or two later, I would just start getting like a splitting pain in my guts. And it got worse and worse and worse. Eventually, I found it was just a particular brand. So I don't know whether it was a solvent they were using, but whatever the case, I thought that it was all Tren. I had sworn it off for a long time, man. I'll tell you, I don't know what was going on. I even got like CT scans. They couldn't figure it out, man. But it was very painful. That's for sure.
No, that seems quite extreme. So maybe there was some sort of allergic situation going on where you were sensitive to one of the compounds that we use, maybe the carrier oil or something of that nature.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering too. I never figured it out, but I was able to. Here's what happened. I started getting it from Masteron, from the same brand,
and then would then suspect carrier oil. Yeah,
right. So yeah, I got away from that. But you know, the only time you ever hear of like Tren cough, I mean, you hear about it from other compounds, but mostly it's from the Tren. So whatever was happening there, you know, it was bad news.
A lot of people mistake Tren cough or what they label as Tren cough well, actually what they've done is they've got compound into the bloodstream immediately.
Yeah. And I think that was happening to me. I don't know how, but it was like it got to a point where it was about every shot.
Yeah. But also Tren does appear to affect capillaries within the lungs as well.
Okay.
Why it's such a rapid action on injection, I don't know. I'm not sure why it works the way it does. It's something I keep meaning to look at, and I haven't actually got round to be honest. And I really ought to, just to find out what's going on there. But for a vast majority, a lot of people report Tren cough from other compounds, and it's not. It's just that it's going directly in the bloodstream, and the BA is then aspirating through the lungs, causing a constriction of the lungs, which in turn causes you to cough.
You mentioned before scarring in the lungs, didn't you?
Yeah, it's low level, but it does occur. Really, where you're going to look at problems with scarring in the lungs would be from prolactin use, PGF2A.
Really?
Yeah, that aspirates out of the lungs.
Okay.
That's a very strange experience. If anyone's ever injected PGF2A, they'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah,
I never have, but I've heard some horror stories.
Yeah, when you suddenly, you usually sat on the toilet because you're about to shit yourself. but at the same time, you suddenly can't breathe. The first couple of times it happens, it's quite scary. And then obviously, you know it's coming. It's a lot easier to cope with.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird shit, is that stuff.
I'll jump over here to Jason Lambert. He says, what are your thoughts on supplementing DHEA and or pregnenolone for men on TRT? Do you feel these should be a staple in everyone's protocol or only used if labs indicate they are low?
DHEA, I would have said, it's going to do no harm, but I would, why waste the money if it's not necessary? So if you have low levels of DHEA and that's potentially what's triggering the low test in some format, then obviously supplementation with that would be a very good idea. HCG, obviously the uses for within cycle are very obvious for lady cell protection. On TRT, it seems to be a personal thing. I find some people find their sense of well-being greatly improved when they run HCG on it with their TRT protocols. Others, not so much. The downside is that HCG can aromatize, and it can cause some increase in estrogen in some people. So
absolutely.
It's very much a case, I'm afraid, of suck it and see. Obviously, HCG protocols for use whilst on cycle or on TRT are very low. We're only talking 250 IU sort of every other day, that sort of level of usage. Some people run slightly higher or go 500 twice a week. But you're not going to be using massive doses. But personally, for myself, I found the hassle of HCG was, from a TRT point of view, was really not worth, in the sense of it didn't really see, I didn't really see any major benefits to well-being.
Okay.
Or anything of that nature, or sexual libido, libido, sexual desire, anything like that. But some people I know have had quite dramatic changes with it. I think it's more a person-dependent thing. There isn't really, I mean, you shut down. So I don't think there is anything really that you're going to glean from bloods about whether you need HCG or not. You're on TRT.
Yeah.
And I think it is very much just a case of you have to trial it and see how you respond.
Okay. And like you were saying too, then watch your estrogen, because if you do try it, you might need a different amount of AI, huh?
Yeah, and then obviously you've got the other add-on problems then, that if you, what AI are you running? Is it affecting cholesterol levels? And you've just got a drug compound you have to add in that then causes more complications. And I do think people are a little bit over micromanaging when they look at TRT.
Yeah.
You know, people look at TRT and say, well, what I want then is if my upper range is 32, I want my blood levels at 30 nmol, and I want my estrogen to be sub 45.
Okay.
But the point is, that isn't normal. And really what we're trying to achieve with TRT is a reflection of normal hormone levels.
Yeah.
And when you do anything that pushes you towards a supraphysiological level, so basically starts pushing you out of range one way or the other, long-term, especially when you're talking protocols that you're going to be on for 10, 15, 20 years, you're going to start to create scenarios later on in life where they could become problematic. So, you know, it is natural for us at certain points in the day to have very low testosterone. It is natural for our estrogen levels to vary throughout the day. You know, we aren't designed as an animal, as a species, as an organism to have very low estrogen and very high testosterone flat rate permanently throughout the day. That isn't how we work. And when you start doing that, the body will start to react in weird and wonderful ways. So it's worth bearing in mind, and this is why I've always advised a very simple TRT protocol of 250 mg every 14 days and nothing else. Unless you are particularly problematic with estrogen, because, and I just let the levels go up and down a little bit. And yeah, you do feel a little bit, possibly a little bit lower towards the end, but that's life. You know, we're not supposed to feel wonderful all the time. It isn't normal. It isn't natural. But we seem to be in an age now where we expect it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the amount of people I see setting TRT protocols up where they're wanting to try and keep their test between sort of 30 and 40 nmol. And it's like, but that's not normal. And when you start pushing things out of range, or you start pushing for a chemical advantage, you then start to increase the risks.
All right, and that's the point right there. Then that's the important thing.
Granted, you're not going to get the risks of running your blood levels at that level as you are if you were running them at 180 or 200 mL. No, of course you're not.
Sure.
What you've got to remember is that a small bit out over a very long period of time can be equally as damaging as a large bit out over a short period of time. And when you're now on TRT at 28 year old, which is becoming more and more common, then you're thinking, you got to remember, you're looking at probably 30, 40 years of taking that drug.
Yeah.
So a slight overdose every week for 30 or 40 years.
It could change things.
It can dramatically change things. which is why we see a lot of studies on long-term TRT showing a high cardiac incident. Purely because, you know, over time problems occur. It's like Chinese water torture. You know, that one single drip's nothing, but when you're sat with it hitting you on the forehead for day after day after day, it becomes unbearable.
Yeah.
And it's the same situation with very low doses. You know, if they're even slightly out over, running things slightly on the high level, long term will create problems.
Yeah, you don't think of it that way. I don't think of it that way often.
We're supposed to feel like shit some days. You know, it's normal.
Hey, speaking of feeling like shit, next question is from Jason Moat. I think it's Moat. He says, talk about test flu and ways to combat it. He has a few questions, but we've got a bunch here, so I'm gonna stick with that one because I think it's a good one. First of all, Dave, have you experienced test flu? And can you explain to any audience member who's not familiar with it what this is?
Yes, I've experienced test flu.
Not fun. Not fun, right?
No, and there's two basically the most. There's two ways you could look at this actually, okay. Which I suppose you could technically regard as test flu. True test flu is an immune response to the hormone being injected into your system. So your body senses an increase in hormone, treats it as a virus and has an antiviral reaction. The temperature you get when you've got flu isn't from the virus, it's from your immune system. And a lot of the symptoms you get when you've got flu come from your immune system. So what happens is that your body senses this increase in hormone, it reacts to it as if it's a viral infection, and it attacks it. Now, it doesn't damage the hormone, so you're not finding your immune system's destroying the hormone that you've created into your body, but you get this reaction, which gives you flu-like symptoms. But the other thing that can happen is a lot of us carry low-level infections all the time.
Yeah.
And if you've ever done a protocol, there's, I think it was Paul Borison actually promoted an antiviral protocol pre-cycle. Now, it's not something that's available in the UK, antiviral medications, but they are available in the States. And what he always advised was for a couple of weeks before you start your cycle, you run an antiviral medication cycle. Because the injection of hormones can suppress your immune system. And it adds an extra load to your immune system. And if you're already at a point where you're holding back a virus, you can feel perfectly normal, but be very close to a tipping point with that viral infection.
Sure.
You add extra load into your system from hormone injections, and suddenly your body just hasn't got enough to keep the virus at bay, and it overwhelms your immune system, and you end up with a cold or a flu. So there are two sort of mechanisms that can go at play here. So if it is a reaction to the hormone, then generally tapering in, if you get it every time you go on cycle, then I'd look at tapering into the cycle. The other option is to then space your injections out more frequently throughout the week. So you're not getting this big hit of hormone, because what a lot of people don't realize is it doesn't matter really what the ester is. When you inject, your blood values will peak at about 24 to 36 hours post-injection.
Yeah, you might not be seeing all the great benefits of massive weight gain and strength yet, but it's building up, right?
But it peaks very, very quickly in your bloodstream, very, very quickly. And, if you go online and just literally type in blood elevation post-hormone injection, you'll see how rapid even the different esters all peak. They all peak very, very quickly, very close to it.
Interesting.
So as a result, if you reduce the dosing, you get less of a high peak, which creates a less of a response from the body. What you'll notice with the body is if you give it an extreme, it'll have an extreme adverse reaction to it, which is the principle we use when we water load and sodium load pre-comp. Because you overload the system with water, the body then goes into overdrive getting rid of it, and then when you stop it, it continues to go into overdrive getting rid of it, vastly dehydrating you very, very quickly. And the same happens with anything else. You know, when you pump a hormone in, if you pump it in high, fast, you'll get an adverse reaction in return. Your body will fight back against it, which is why we get this test fluid reaction. So if you lower the dose, you can have the same amount of total dose a week. But say you're shoving in 500 mega test on a Monday morning. If you're having big problems, what about doing four shots of 125 throughout the week? The hormone peaks will then be more gradual and you'll get less of an immune response.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. So basically, the way to avoid it is not let yourself get there to begin with. If you are already feeling it, what would you suggest? Can you begin to back off and do the protocol you're talking about now?
Yeah.
And you'll start feeling relief? Or would you suggest to give it a break? Or
the common injection protocol for most people on a slow-acting ester is Monday and Thursday.
Okay.
Or Tuesday and Friday. But, you know, we sort of tend to work around that four-day gap. So keep the dose, total dose for the week the same, but split it up over more injections. That's one approach. If you're starting out and you know you're prone to test flu, then taper in. So take a few weeks to build up to dose. The other thing is just ride it out because your body should adapt within a few weeks. So you can just ride it out. I, to be honest, not probably the best way, but I used to take a lot of Lemsips when I got test flu and just ride it out because I knew when I start a cycle for the first 3 weeks, I was going to feel like absolute shit.
Okay.
As I got into the bigger cycles, I'd taper more as well because it was just too much to cope with in one hit. But I knew I'd just feel like crap for the first 2-3 weeks. It happened every time I ran high test.
Yeah.
So, but then I was always very, very sensitive to PIP from fast-acting test as well. So I've always been particularly sensitive to hormone when it came to a reaction-type situation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'll, so on TRT, I get PIP from prescription sust.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned that before.
Because it's got prop in it.
and speaking of, that's that we've got you're giving me these perfect segues. Justin Meyer asks... propionate injection pain. Doubt there is anything I can do about it, but always interested in ideas. How do you deal with this one, Dave? I know for you, you just don't use propionate, right?
If I do, I have to microdose.
Mm.
So when I used to use prop, I used to have to microdose it. So these are your options. Multiple site microdosing. The issue you've got is that because prop has a higher concentration of hormone, your body is sensitive to the hormone injection.
Yeah.
So if you're sensitive to prop, test base will absolutely cripple you. So you've two choices. You can lessen the size of the injection by siting it over multiple sites with microdosing, which literally means if you're putting in a Miller test prop, you put 5.2 mil shots in using an insulin needle all over. Or you can mix it with another compound. So if you're running test prop and say mass prop or MPP, then mix the test with the MPP or the mass because you're effectively diluting the hormone in a higher volume of fluid.
Yeah.
You're not physically, but basically now you've got 2 mL of fluid going in with the same concentration of test, which is what you're sensitive to. Heat post-injection on site will probably help with dispersion as well. Beyond that, there's not really a lot more you can do. But you should find a lesser reaction if you mix it with other compounds or you microdose. And you will find that certain injection sites are more sensitive than others.
Yeah. Yeah, that would tell me a little bit more about that. What do you think that's all about?
I'm not sure. It's like my arms could always take a decent amount of injection.
Huh. Okay.
And my shoulders, my glutes hated it. I couldn't put test into my quads, but I could put any other compound in my quads. But I could put test into my calves.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I've never touched a calf injection. I've only heard nightmares about that.
I've done calves, quads, hamstrings, glutes, lats, pecs, delts, but I've never done a front delt. Done rear delt, done medial delt. Tries, both heads, all three heads actually. Bicep, both heads. Never done a forearm. That would be that would be pretty insane, I would have thought. I don't seem to see any real pattern as to why, just for certain people. But if I inject glutes, pretty much every injection I get a lump. But then my glutes don't fire particularly well. They never have done.
Yeah.
So I think the glute issue is more down to my glute muscles not being firing correctly, and therefore the muscle not recruiting correctly. So there's a lack of movement in the muscle, which creates a lack of dispersion of the oil. But I can't put test into my quads. I'll be crippled. But I can put test in my arms. I still get inflammation if I put it in my biceps, especially if I've got prop in there, or my delts. But I can cope with it in those a lot easier.
I've got kind of a funny front delt story for you, Dave. I used to do, lateral delts a lot. And as I got bigger, my arm didn't stretch around quite as far. But I didn't quite see it that way. I just assumed I just reached my arm over and I hit that lateral delt. I got to a point where the shots really started hurting. And then I kind of looked in the mirror at what I was doing. And because my size had increased over, an extended period of time, I basically could only reach to my front delt at that point. And I felt like I was doing it right. I did what I had always been doing. But I couldn't reach as far. So my hand was kind of stopping at my front delt versus the lateral delt. I had to get a little trickier after that and learn how to grab my elbow and pull my arm around so I could reach it. But I guess that is the problems that you get when you start getting bigger, growing.
Yeah, I had to do a weird contortion, should I say, in a door frame with my arm propped up and come across so I could hit the medial delt.
I think I know what you're talking about. I think I know exactly what you're talking about because I think I've done that move too.
Or I'd just get a wife to do it. That worked a lot easier.
There you go.
We used to draw marks on me where she was going to go in.
Really?
Yeah, because she'd forget. So she'd say, right, put it in there. And obviously she'd get the needle. And she'd go, right, where did you say? So I just said, right, there. She'd draw a mark. And then she'd sort everything, come back and fire it in.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's see. Sam Stockford. He says, tips on improving digestion and pushing up larger volumes of food. I feel like we kind of covered this. He says, I know Dave spoke about small doses of insulin briefly, so potentially going into more detail and potentially covering other supplements like probiotics techniques. We've talked a lot about that already. I don't know if there's much we can, but you know what though? Instead of covering that, he says he has a Dear Davey question as well. Maybe we should.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now, and let's hit the Dear Davey one.
Okay. He says also not quite a Dear Davey, but Dave's thoughts on breaching the topic of steroid use with parents and family members. I know personally, my family hate it, and it's forced me to push my use underground, so to speak. But to me, if managed sensibly, health monitored, you can minimize the risk implications in pursuit of your passions. Be interested to hear Dave and his thoughts of his children and parents. How do you deal with this, Dave, in a situation like this guy? Sounds like he's a younger guy. His parents play an influence in his life. And, we want to make our parents happy, right? First of all, we don't want to upset them.
I never told my parents, but I never denied it either. I just didn't speak about it. And I think my dad passed away quite some years ago, so it never really became an issue. But I think my mother did know, because I remember once she asked me why, after I'd done a news bulletin talking openly about it. But regards to, I think there's two levels here. You've got family and you've got partner. And the consequences of the dishonesty between the two is quite different. If you choose not to tell a parent or a sibling, they're going to be pissed at you, possibly. But their concern comes out of their knowledge. And their knowledge is generally a product of media. So you can't blame a parent or a sibling from being concerned about your well-being. I mean, at the end of the day, these things aren't safe. Let's not beat around the bush with this. When all the information they have gathered is from media sources, because that's all the media will have told them. So their concern is for your well-being and your safety. And you can't view that as a negative, because it's not. You know, they are concerned for you.
Yeah.
But the damage done in that relation is really just going to be their annoyance at you for putting yourself at risk in their eyes. But when it is a partner and you do it clandestine, you know, you hide your usage from them, and if they discover it, then you're risking a lot more.
Yeah.
Because you've deceived your partner, the person you're supposed to trust and who's supposed to be able to trust you. And the connotations of deceiving them are far greater, because, you know, if you can lie to me about that, what else are you lying to me about? You know, are you being unfaithful? Are you doing things, other things you shouldn't be doing? So the pressure that can put on a relationship is absolutely huge. Now, I would say, whenever possible, always be honest with your partner or a family member, if that's the situation that you're going to be using, because at the end of the day, if anything goes wrong and you are found in a position where you are not able to communicate, i.e. you're in an accident, or you end up being comatose for some reason, then having someone that can tell medical professionals what you are doing is a great benefit.
Yeah.
Because they will then be able to consider that, and when it comes to treatment, and what they can or can't do with you. It's not always easy. And I've found that, I mean, I've always been very, very open with anyone I've been with at the time, and pretty much because of when I start to use, anyone that I ever had a relationship with was told very early on, look, I use gear. If you don't like it, there's a door, fuck off.
Yeah.
Because it was part of me. So if you're going to be in a relationship with somebody and you're a user when you meet, then if you've not told them that, then you've not told them about you, have you? So you've already started a relationship on a lie and a falsehood, which is not really the best footing for any relationship. With a family member, because obviously your usage starts later on in life, then it's the decision you've come to. So I've always found that a good test bed is to use the old my mate scenario.
Yeah.
My mate Dave started taking steroids. Oh, he's a bloody idiot. Well, yeah, but he's gone to this guy, and you know, he's gone to this guy called Scott Stevenson, who's a doctor, he's got his advice from him about how to manage it and how to be safe and minimize the risk, because he really, really wants to improve his physique, and he's looking at competing, and everybody in competition is doing it these days, and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it should be a subject you have to keep coming back to or bring up more often. Obviously, you bring it up too much and people are going to start going, well, why are you asking about this all the time?
Yeah.
But then start an open conversation as well. Can you go, well, you know what? I had actually considered it.
And you're like 30 pounds heavier at the time. I might use some one day.
You'd be surprised how ignorant people are.
Oh, sure.
Involved in usage.
Oh, sure.
And I don't mean that in a bad, so that's not in an insulted way, but some of the work I do involves me in dealing with people that work in professions where usage is not allowed. And they've been accused of usage, or they're facing disciplinaries because of usage. And when you look at the causes or the reasoning behind why they've been questioned in the first place, I remember one case, and the intel that they had was that, well, he's got big arms and skinny legs, so he must be using steroids. And this that was regarded as a very valid reason as to why he may be using steroids.
Really? The skinny legs were part of this, huh?
Yes, yeah. And you know, that's how little a lot of people know.
Huh.
And yet, because, and the thing is, if you put size on but you don't have condition, you're generally not regarded by Joe Bloggs as a user,
Yeah.
particularly for older generation. Obviously, the younger generation are more aware of steroids, they're more aware of the effects of it. But yeah, so like 40 plus years of age, if you put on 3 stone but you're not lean, yeah, you're not a steroid user. But if you put on 3 pound but you get very lean, then you're a steroid user, because
Yeah.
they relate condition to drug use rather than size.
If it was only that easy to get in shape, right?
Yeah, I agree. But you know, it's always going to be a difficult subject, and probably the best is to bring the subject up in other contexts to gauge the responses.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately, at some point, you're just going to have to be honest and say you're considering it,
Yeah.
and see what they say.
I bet you it's got to be different. I don't know where he's from, but where you're at, Dave, if somebody were to go to their family and say that, then it's a choice that somebody's making. But here it's a choice somebody's making, and they're breaking a lot of laws and all of that stuff. It's like it becomes a lot more messy in countries where anabolics are illegal,
Yes, because you've now got a criminal element to it as well, which
Yeah.
is obviously nobody is going to want to encourage somebody to break the law.
Right.
So yeah, that definitely adds a much bigger element to it. And I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of Joe Public in the UK that thinks steroids are illegal.
Yeah.
They just don't know. So it's one of them where you've just got to start talking about the topic, engage reaction, and it may be a case of that you get one family member that's open, so you can discuss it with them more openly, but then other family members remain closed. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd be able to tell everybody there'd be no judgment, but unfortunately, that's not the case. And it's down to, I suppose, how much being honest with your family means to you regard protecting them from the stress and worry that will probably be coming on if they know that you are using. But I do think it's important that somebody knows what you're doing.
Yeah, fair enough. I think for safety purposes, everything you're saying, that's something a lot of people haven't looked at. And I think it makes a lot of sense to have that level of responsibility in your life.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is as well, is if the person is someone who you feel you can trust, then you also have a benchmark then for if you start acting a twat.
True.
Because they can turn around and say, I don't know what you're doing at the moment, but you've been a real prick just lately. And because you won't see it yourself, and you go, all right, well, I've just upped my dose, and maybe I am being a bit, all right, okay, well, then I need to rein it in a little bit, or I need to whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I always had my wife, and she was very, very good at recognizing the difference. Because there's also this, and I've seen it tons of times, you know, you go on gear, and then the first argument you have with your partner or significant other or family member, oh, that's because of the steroids, you've got road rage.
Yeah.
Whereas she was very good at saying, well, that's just an argument, but that behavior has changed.
Yeah.
You know, you're more short with the kids, or you're more less tolerant of this. But every argument definitely wasn't down to drugs. But she would look more at trends of behavioral patterns. The worst for me was when I dieted. Always an absolute twat when I diet. Ate it.
I remember you saying that before. I'll move on here. We actually have more questions than we'll be able to cover. See if I could find a really good one here to finish on, and then we'll save the rest of them for next time. Ooh, there's two pretty good ones here. There's so I you know and he, I want to say this too. So he said that's not quite a Dear Davy. I do think it is. I think that was a good one. I don't think it has to necessarily be just about love relationships, it could be any type of interpersonal relationship. I think that's good stuff. It doesn't have to be just a love question. I liked that one a lot, and it was a different spin on something we already had talked about, because before we addressed, telling your girlfriend, but I think your family, your parents, your kids, that's a whole other thing. Like, we didn't even talk about kids, telling children.
Kids, yeah,
you know?
Kids is a real deal. I mean, my kids know.
Yeah.
But I've not. It's been a progressive thing as they've got older and the more they've learned to understand. Now, obviously, steroids, my house is full of steroids. I've got tons of them because I use them as examples and displays and stuff on presentations. So they've always been around this drug culture. So for them, for my kids, it was a little bit different because they knew it's what I did for a job.
You just, I know what you did, Dave. You just waited till they were old enough, and then you handed them a copy of Under Construction 2, and you're like, watch this, and then let's talk about it.
Well, actually, the youngest, we did have a bit of an awkward situation because the youngest went into school one day. This was several years ago. I mean, this would be 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how the conversation came up, but at some point during the day, she declared that her father was a drug dealer.
Oh, good God. Yikes.
So the school did inquire as to where this had come from.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a drug educator. So I've got a large amounts of them in display. I have a lot of flight cases that have all been cut out, you know, and they're just literally stacks and stacks of different types of steroids inside them.
No kidding. Did you have like old stuff too, like classic examples from the 80s and 90s? No way. That's cool.
I even got a testosterone called Arnold.
What?
And it's a single vial in a big sort of, you know, like the standard pill cassettes you get where you just push through from the back.
Yes, yes.
It's like that, and it contains one vial of testosterone, and it's got a picture of Arnie on it, and it's called Arnold.
Is it an amp, or is it a vial?
It's a single amp, 1 mil, 250 mg test.
Oh, wow. That's cool. I wonder if somebody marketed that off Arnold. That's funny.
But the fact that it's an ampule as well means that this was a pretty high-end.
Yeah.
Because an amp machine is a very expensive bit of kit. So this wasn't your standard UGL. This was most likely a foreign pharmaceutical company that was just trying to produce some shit on the side, so to speak. But yeah, I've got some really old labs in one of my cases.
How old would you estimate the Arnold amp to be?
15, 20 years.
So that's pretty old still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's funny, man.
Oh, yeah, I've got all sorts of weird and wonderful shit.
let's see. Alexander says short-term GH dose, short-term high-dose GH versus long-term low-dose GH. We normally just say we don't talk about the length other than run it for a good. I've always heard, Dave, run it for a good extended amount of period of time to get benefits. You want to, here's your board information. You know, I think they say 16 weeks at the least, you know, at least 2 units a day, 5 on, 2 off, something like that, or as much as you can afford. And that's your limit, but use it for 16 weeks. You always hear that on the boards. They either say 12 or 16. I can't remember. But I do agree that the longer you use it, the better you see compositional changes. But let's break this down, Dave. What are some of your thoughts here?
Well, this is probably, I have an opinion on this that is probably not shared by most, and I get quite a lot of resistance to this opinion, but it is actually an opinion that was shared by Dan DeShane as well, which I didn't actually realize till this week.
Really?
Yeah. Someone messaged me about it. Growth hormone does not grow muscle, simple as. Growth hormone is only useful in low doses intermittently to aid recovery, to aid sleep, and cellular recovery. So for that reason at all, there is no reason to take high dose whatsoever. And I don't give a fuck what so-and-so said and what this pro's supposedly done or what. I have never, ever, ever seen anyone gain anywhere near the muscular size that is claimed to be gained from high dose growth.
Yeah.
What I have seen is high water retention, very, very full individuals that once the growth is removed, so does the size.
Hmm.
The problem with long-term growth is you will start to get a reduction in T4 to T3 conversion.
Hmm.
And obviously there is the issue of insulin resistance. which Grove is very, very good at causing. So the two ways I look at Grove are every other day, low dose. Now, depending on the quality of your Grove would depend on what that would be, but I would say you'd be looking 2 to 4 IU. Or microdosing throughout the day. But when you microdose, you need to keep it 45 minutes away from food, either way. Because if you have an insulin spike within that 45 minutes, you will actually lower the effect of the GH. Good for a fat burner, good as a general well-being health product in regards to cellular rejuvenation and everything else and life extension. But if you want to take, if you want to take Grove to get big, you're just wasting your money.
Yeah, you have said that before. So is there any benefit to short-term use of Grove?
Depends on what you're using it for. So, I mean, if we take away then that we're not looking at Grove for muscular growth and we're only looking at Grove from cellular recovery, then obviously running a low dose throughout your cycle is going to have benefit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's going to improve sleep and it's going to improve recovery and everything else. The danger with running longer term growth, even on an EOD basis, is that you increase the potential of insulin resistance. So you've got to bear that in mind. And then obviously the problem is then when you stop the growth, you have a reduced conversion of T4 to T3, so you have a reduced metabolic rate, you're insulin resistant, and guess what? Shit, you're going to get fat and get fat fast. So I would be periodic with it, and I would make sure that you run. I love berberine, I go on about it quite a bit, or that you look at running some sort of keto period post-usage just to recover insulin sensitivity and make sure that's nice and good. But I would stay away from very long-term use for the simple reason of the insulin resistance long-term. And it's one of them where it's all good and hunky-dory while you're using it, and then as soon as you come off, everything goes to shit.
Yeah.
And then you're wondering why.
That makes sense. You know, I hear a lot of people, Dave, that they say, hey, okay, I'm getting ready to start growth hormone for the first time. I'm going to get T4 to run with that because my T4 is going to get messed up. Dave, do you think that they need to use thyroid hormone out the gate with their growth preemptively, or would you prefer that they waited until there was an actual issue to do that?
I would wait personally.
Okay. Okay, because I see a lot of people, it's the same thing with hey, I'm getting ready to start Tren, so I'm going to start, you know, an AI, and I'm going to run Kaber twice a week, you know, one of those things.
I'd say from personal experience, and I've run PharmaGrow for 26 IU a day. And from speaking to other people, I speak to a couple of, I've never been a bit of a name dropper, I don't like doing it, but I had a conversation with somebody this past week who's pro, and he just basically turned and said, you know what, I've come around to you. The more I've used it, the more I've been involved with it, and the more I've seen others use it, the more I tend to agree with you.
Okay.
That it isn't what people think it is. He said, however, he says, that illusion of being bigger and fuller when you earn your living on the way you look has an advantage. And I said, I'm not denying that. I'm not denying that. Everything has uses. I just do not feel that it is beneficial for muscular growth. And when you start looking at the money side of things, it's a proxy drug.
Yeah.
So that's the other problem with it as well is, you know, I mean, I've sunk thousands of pounds into growth hormone over the years. Thousands. We are not available now. Please leave your name. It was just a complete waste.
Yeah. Yeah. In that case, man, I side with you. I definitely do. I feel like you're right, man. For me, it's moderate doses for an extended time. Like you said, I'm not expecting to necessarily directly grow from it, but if it puts me in a better overall position, I might be able to be be bigger than I was otherwise while maintaining leanness through.
This is the two things that you're going to get off it. You're going to get an increased condition. You're going to get an increased recovery. But at the same time, what you've got to remember, and this is one of my big arguments, how many people do you know when they run growth, they increase their training frequency?
Yeah.
If you got increased recovery, then why aren't you exploiting it?
And what you're saying is that you've mentioned before too, you think that there aren't really that many people that are truly overtraining to begin with.
No, under recovery, lack of food. I mean, I've had a couple of clients that have joined me that have made absolutely miraculous transformations within a week or two. And the reason was they were starving themselves. They've not gained muscle mass particularly, but they've just gained a lot of fullness.
Yeah.
People are scared to eat because people are worried about getting fat.
Sure.
And you know, if you're eating clean, you've got to really hammer the food to get fat.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen in a short time. It's gonna take a while to add up.
It is. And if you're going to use growth, bear in mind it improves recovery, and as a result of that, bear in mind that you should be considering a more frequent training program.
All right.
Because if you're not recovering and you need the growth to recover, then your fundamental program is incorrect.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, because you're now telling me that, well, I'm not normally recovering. Well, why are you at a situation where you're not normally recovering? Because you can't stay on growth indefinitely.
Yeah.
And so there's the other aspect. And I mean, prime example, client messaged me today. We've had a really good year, put on a ton of size and a ton of strength. And he says, I'm in absolute agony when I go back to the gym to train the body part again. He says, particularly legs. He says, I'm just not recovering. I went, all right. I said, what's your strength like? He said, oh, it's good. In fact, if anything, it's still going up. I said, so how can you not be recovering?
Yeah.
Just because you're in pain doesn't mean you've not fully recovered. It just means you're in pain. Yes, it is an indicator and it should be taken into consideration. But if you're still progressing in the gym, then you must be recovering. Because if you weren't progressing in the gym, you wouldn't, you know, if you weren't recovering, you wouldn't be progressing in the gym.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest issues that most people have is they undertrain to their recovery abilities.
So start looking at that before the growth. It's always, that's what I think the answer always is, really, Dave. You know, the more I listen to you is get back to the foundation and make sure that that's stable.
The only thing where this changes is when you start talking about moving heavy weight, because your central nervous system will struggle quite quickly.
Okay.
So if you're hitting single and doubles quite regularly, then you'll probably find you'll get to a point where your central nervous system's not recovering. Your muscles are recovering fine, but your central nervous system isn't. So there's always that to bear in mind, that we're not just talking about straight muscle recovery. We also have to consider the central nervous system as well.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap here, Dave. We actually still have, if you could hear my computer, we have more questions coming in by the minute. We could really do it. We could do like a marathon for the next 5 hours, I think. So we'll stop it though, and we'll save these questions, and it'll give us plenty of material. There's a couple of Dear Davies in here. I got a Dear Davy private message to me. He wants to remain anonymous, but hey, buddy, I got your question there. We've got a few Dear Davies at the message board too, so we will get through all of that stuff. As we go, we've got enough material for the next show and probably a little bit even into the following show. We're sitting in a good place. We're starting out 2019 right. Dave, I got a new sponsor for the network, by the way.
Oh, good. Who?
True Nutrition.
Oh.
Yeah, they're gonna start taking part in supporting Advices Radio. We have the best bar ever is going to sponsor us to do a podcast directly from the Arnold Classic, which it's going to be a first in its kind. So these are things that relate to my personal goals for 2019 and the things that I've decided I wanted to achieve this year. So it's already happening, and I'm excited about it. I'm not waiting till the last minute, Dave.
Right.
All right.
So do I get cheap supplements now?
We'll see. I gotta work something. We'll see what we got. We gotta work out a deal with them. Do they have an affiliate in the UK?
I've no idea because I don't use supplements.
Okay.
I've actually no idea.
Okay, because I think they're US based, and I know that there's another company that does a lot of work with the UK. They're similar.
I think they do. Yeah, I think they do. To be honest, okay. But I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the only supplement I use is Mental Support Max.
Oh, really? Strong.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only one I use.
Okay. Yeah, I think you mentioned that before.
I really like it. I really rate it. I mean, Richard's a mate anyway, so I would support him, but I wouldn't promote a product that I didn't believe in because
absolutely,
I just don't agree with it. Rich knows that. He knows I won't get behind something I don't agree with. But I rate the stuff, but he's not really over your way yet, unfortunately. I think he's trying to sort out some distributors in the US, but at the moment, I think that's a project for this year.
Okay. Well, this is a good place to quit, man. We're ahead, and we've got a bunch of stuff left to go. So, Dave, thanks as always for doing the show with me, and happy 2019.
Pleasure, mate. Take care, and we'll all speak soon.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon.
Radio.